Grace to you and welcome to another Deeper Daily podcast. We are nearing the end of January, just 4 days left in this first month of the year, and we are starting a new chapter. You know, I don't like to do that, but I didn't want to drag out the fourth chapter any longer. I felt like we had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish through Romans 4. So now we begin Romans chapter 5, and I don't know if this is encouraging or discouraging, but we will probably seriously slow down. Now, why I say I don't know if that's encouraging or discouraging is those of you that follow with us every day through our journey, you know that it took us over 3 months to get through four chapters. And if we slow down, then how long will it take us to get through the rest of the book? Well, the reason I say we'll probably slow down is because in the fifth chapter, and this is notorious, every Bible scholar, student who's ever studied the book of Romans really starts to slow down in the fifth chapter, not because they're bogged down, but because Paul unpacks some of the most glorious revelatory material on the reality of the new covenant of grace that exists anywhere in written literature. Everyone in this day and age, and I say everyone loosely, of course, but everyone has contributed to grace literature, myself included. I wrote a book in 2011 called Revelation to Transformation, How Seeing Jesus Will Change Your Life. It was my contribution, so to speak, after nearly 4 years of a revelatory release in my spirit into grace. It was my contribution to the grace material. It's one of 10,000 books on the new covenant or grace, probably, that have been published in the last decade. It's just one little voice. It's blessed some people. It's helped some people. It's been quoted from out of other grace books. But no matter what I wrote, and no matter what all of the other contributors, great contributors, might I add, I feel like I'm really just one little voice in the midst of a lot of really, really powerful voices of grace. No matter what I or any of the others have contributed, it pales in comparison to what we already saw unfolding in the fourth chapter of Romans, but what we will see in chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8, four of the most significant writings, four chapters of the most significant writings on the doctrine of grace that exist anywhere in the world. None of us have been able to do what Paul did. And in our defense, none of us are trying. None of us are trying to establish new ideas. Paul was establishing new ideas. For those who think Paul was just uncovering old ideas, I would argue or counter respectfully that Paul was taking things from old covenant passages that had never been thought of as new covenant passages, and he was making them new covenant. One example is, and I just preached a couple of weeks ago in a church here in Southern California, and I ministered from Romans 15, where Paul says, he quotes the 69th Psalm. He says, the reproaches of them, of us all, were laid upon him, laid upon you. And he is quoting David praying in Psalm 69. And I took the congregation back to the 69th Psalm and read the context. And it's obvious that David is talking about himself praying to God. And yet, Paul quotes it as if it's Jesus. And I ask the congregation, and I bring it to you, what gives Paul the right to just interject Jesus? Because Paul had a master plan in his reading of Scripture, and that was to always find Jesus, to always read of Christ in the text. So he is doing something in the writing of the New Testament that has actually been offensive to some people. There are those who do not accept Paul's teaching. They think that Paul harmed Christianity by making it about the new covenant. I think that's a silly argument. I've even read those who think Paul was demonic in that he insisted upon this new covenant of grace and that he was antinomian. He was anti-law, and that it shows up in his writings. Well, I think if you listen to people like myself and no doubt many others, you see that we don't agree with that. And in fact, we don't think that Paul was anti-law at all. Paul was compartmentalizing the law, putting it in the place where it belonged to do what it was designed to do. And so when you get into the fifth chapter, and I know I'm doing a lot of intro, you know me, that's how I treat these breakdowns in the chapters. I think it's good for our study. As you get into this fifth chapter, you'll notice that he's building on a theme he began near the end of the third chapter. Let me take you back for a moment. Romans 3:21. All the way from Romans 1:1 to Romans 3:21, I reminded you that there's a transition coming. Don't get too ahead of yourself, I would say. Don't get too excited. Whatever you're reading here, Paul's leading you to a transition. And that 21st verse is, but now the righteousness of God apart from the law is revealed. And I told you, everything Paul's been saying, he's leading up to a but now moment. So whatever you're reading, don't sell out yet, because there's a transition. Since Romans 3:21, through the end of the third chapter, which is 31 verses, through the entire fourth chapter, which is 25 verses, Paul has begun to slowly build the case that now righteousness is not achieved through the law, and he uses as his template Abraham and the entire Abrahamic experience being an operation of faith, not an operation of works. Now, granted, Paul doesn't break these into chapters. The translators did. But this is a pretty quality break, because you start the fifth chapter with a therefore. And so in light of previous information, we have a therefore. And I will read verse 1 tomorrow, and we will get started on the depth of this chapter. And right out of the gate, there's something pretty incredible that I think Paul is referencing from the Old Testament. And you don't want to miss it. Until then, I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. Grace to you. God bless.